Mail them out.
What's the mic?
The mic is fine, I think.
Yeah, if you want me to raise it, it'll work.
Just fine. Well, I'd like to thank very much Paul Casey for inviting me to appear before you tonight. It was something I was eager to do. I'm eager to be back in Ireland reading, and to be back in Cork and reading for you. And I have to thank the ever kindly hospitality of Kathy and Tom McCarthy, who are hidden away in the corner there. But you know of them very well.
Sorry, you're just pointing at me, and I think they want me to bring it nearer to you, but I'm not sure.
Turn it towards them.
Or turn it towards them, okay. There you go.
I make almost yearly visits to Cork, and have done so since the early 1970s. And I remember many Cork poets: Patrick Calvin, Gregory O'Donoghue, Sean Don, Sean Lucy, and of course especially Sean Montague, whom I last saw. 2016. Part of my writing has always informed, but what I have learned from you and your Irish tradition in English and in Irish, and your great Irish poets, and also from you folks who give an audience for poetry, but also contribute your own poems to it. And it's a very generous thing you do by supporting this, especially in this day and age. It keeps a tradition alive. A tradition that is important to our sense of ourselves in this world. I'd like to read from Mortal one poem that will let you know what I'm up to in this book. It's called Ullard Steps, and it's based on a churchyard in Kilkenny that I visited with Kerry Hardy some years ago. This book is about sensing, just beginning to sense mortality in our lives, in our own experience. It doesn't have anything to teach about that. Eamon is a little wrong. I don't think it's a wise book. If you find wisdom here, then it's somebody else speaking through me. Ullard Steps. One brown, one white, two mares stand off as I walk their churned ground up the hill toward the stile. Three stone steps up and then over. I put a foot wrong and go down like a bag of coal, shoulder first, then face down, silent in the moss at the edge of the road, the breath gone out of me. Deep in that space, waters slip that fill a stone well below, and hoofprints in their circuit where the ground is soft. The well is St. Fikra's well, and it's, the water there is good for the liver, but I wrenched my shoulder, I was hit. Kerry Hardy thought I was dead. The earliest poem in this book is a poem based on a trip to Kylemore Abbey. It's called Pike. Have any of you been to Kylemore Abbey? Yeah, you remember the lake in front of it and the ghastly mansion and the legends about the school, etc. Pike. Where an omnibus idles in lucent July, Japanese couples come from the nuns' tea room past postcard racks and snap redundantly themselves before a blue boat beached in the rushes. There are two sites of Kylemore Abbey, the Gothic chapel and this lakeside pastoral, but no Polaroid can develop the long bronzy thresh of the pike sawing the line at an oaken oarlock and plunging deep from the light. The instinctual hunter betrays the serene Latin of these Irish Danes of Ypres, Benedictines all, a crucifix in each varnished room of the robber baron's castle. But the sight foresight makes is not the chalk or charcoal fish of the catacombs, but the real ravener, slick, toothy, wyboned, haunting the glacial chill of Polakapul, implacable, ancient, myopic, deaf to human prayer. And then a poem I wrote just a couple of months ago, called A Bible Story. My mother had her little child's Methodist Bible that she got for confirmation, and it had pictures in it. Looking at those pictures, based on one of those, you know, the 1920s sort of 19-teens pictures. We think of them as cliches, but suddenly I was looking at a picture and something came to me, and this poem just came out of the blue, and I will confess to you, I have no idea what it means. You tell me. A Bible story. He came to her, where she sat under a dry tree. He came to her where she sat in her weeds, on a quarried stone, a woven sack open at her feet. He came to her with open arms. She reached down and lifted out first a deep bowl of wood, then a wide vessel of brass, and last of white marble, and from it poured water into the metal, and then the olive bowl that she lifted and tipped until that water fell for a moment over his two hands. So, Mortal is arranged in three sections. The first section is poems I was asked to write by the widow of a friend of mine. He was a Vietnam veteran, a scholar of Vietnam War literature, and a drinker, a smoker, and a pianist. So, those poems began as sonnets, but I never could make them work them outright. So the formal trick of the book is to start with a sonnet, let it be imperfect, and let it decay as the sections of the books go on, like an isotope. So, here's one poem from that sequence. It's called A Misquotation. And there's a epigraph from Bach, Ruft uns die Stimme. Talk to him while you work. He will answer, Michael had said. Bright, warm, dry after a week's worth of needful rain. This work is a simple pleasure. Cutting English time, laying out its flavor, earth to earth end, laying down spray by spray of green leaf. Some say it is the hardiest variety. Fractals, dendrites, growth gives slow advantage to one leaf, then another, and helps roots hoard their woody sugar until cold come. It is for yourself that you weep. At first, that was right, but not at last, I hope, as I stand, secateurs in hand, staring south into that sudden blue breaking through of the horizon. And then a poem when I visited him on the day of his death in hospital. Heaven help us that we die in hospital. It has the epigraph from Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, a wonderful piece of music. You should go get it. Like the Dew of Hermon from Psalm 23, maybe. Still sitting up, facing south into afternoon, breathing on your own at last, not resting, but striving. Hardly is there effort extra to share a word, yet the green and gold lines jump steadily in the face of the monitor. We look then into your open face, masked for oxygen, into your open eyes, unmasked. We cannot explain it when the black of your pupils grows and you stare out over the cluttered sill, straight over city and river, away into the open blue above Holman Field. And after a breath, return to us, listen and look on, who caress your dear head or press your bruised hand for you to let us know we are here still. The second, as most books of poetry are, is part of the poem is called 1944, and it's about me. And my experiences in hospital. And this is one called an isotope. Kindly, they help you lie dead still in your clothes, left arm above your head in the antique posture of grief. I recalled this room as underground, brick-walled, but truth took it two stories up, where I wait as the tincture of thallium chloride and its half-life answers the beating heart's hunger for potassium. Soon the heart weakly glows, sacred as any pious lithograph, radiating a wounded shape onto the slowly orbiting film of measured fact. Loss is a dear salt like any other, but its half-life remains unknown. Muted blows of a pile driver reach up from the diggings for the new North Wing. And later on in that sequence is a poem about weather forecasts. We have very vivid, animated weather forecasts. This is called ground truth, and weather forecasters refer to ground truth as what people know who are on the ground in the weather, as opposed to what the computer makes up for us on the screen. It's about tornadoes, thunderstorms, big ones. Ground truth. Days of it. Nights of it. The Weather Channel animating in smears and commas of florid color, streams of digital echo, Doppler signatures of debris, and states in disarray, all endlessly explained in running duets of expertise, sounded and shone above the thin line, typing out names of good Christian towns that lie splintered and prone aside flooded highways. Poor Tom takes us by the hand to the brow of our hill. The pickup speared, the limb cracked, our dog crushed, and our bedding shredded across raked fields. The cover of the book shows you three pots by a friend of mine, a potter, Kit Cornell. She put them into one bowl, so that's the structure of the book. But this is a poem about having missed the chance to buy something that meant something to me. And we all do that. We buy things that don't mean anything to us and forget to buy the things that do mean something to us. A Cup by Kit Cornell. I did not buy the real thing at the market on Hospital Hill that last summer morning, but took away the perfect postcard of it, a bookmark, a memento, as if the glaze gave a scene we will travel into but not return from, a gray and sandy foreshore, darker where the tide laps back, and where we will remain gazing at the blue gleam lightly turning across darker waters to the lip of the cup lit up like a line of low clouds lying easterly on a horizon. Out there, the cup waits, empty and ever, ready to fill, raise, and pass, hand to hand. The last portion of the book. It is entitled Father, and it has the poems about the last month of my father's life. And my mother never told me how he actually died, the actual scene of his dying. They kept it all from us. We were 3 days late. This is a new poem that when she told me what actually happened. It's called At Last. The retired nurse calls her back into his room that looks into thin aspens and oaks of a marsh. She goes in past the girl from the hospice, and he asks her to come lie beside him in his bed. Not shy at all, courting like a kid, his pajama top opened where the pacemaker lies under the flesh at his collarbone and makes an outline like a pack of lucky strikes in a shirt pocket. They lie together a little while, side by side, not lonesome at all, as if they were dancing away back in the 40s to the small band at the General Edwards Inn. He asks her for a kiss. After, he pulls himself up, slides his legs over the edge of the mattress, pauses, looks out, and slips down slow to the floor, gone in a foxtrot through the quivering leaves. But I didn't know that story then when I was thinking of these poems. I started with one called My Father's Feet. My father's feet. He props himself up at the edge of his painted bed, arms angled out, hand holding the mattress's edge. I have lotion and a towel on the floor beside me. He has a lot to say about the strain of bending unsteadily to clip his nails, care for his feet on his own. Kneeling in front of him, I rub the lotion between my palms and take one white foot at a time, ankle to toes, easing the tendons, and then palm each heel, each narrow sole, again and again, letting him catch the lotion scent of rosemary. On the bed's grained headboard, the faded gold and black, someone once stenciled a dim theorem of a cornucopia spilling out apples, melons, grapes. This is the least I can do. At one point, turns out my parents gave us all a religious education, but they were all utterly unreligious. My father wanted to know the Lord's Prayer, and this poem is called Our Father. No longer could he curve the letters of his name on a used envelope or fill out the right line of a check. He asked her. He had found her child's Bible in the book rack that ended in owls. Standing in her bedroom that night, he held it out to her. Would she write it out for him, that famous petition, those words that everyone knows? She wrote it out from memory, on a steno pad she kept in the kitchen. He kept it folded in a drawer next to his bed, in a drawer he never opened. And the next to last poem I read to you tonight is called A Fall. Light in the hall. He had fallen, bathrobe open on waxy flesh, bruises, cleaning himself with dissolving pieces of tissue, smearing. He had fallen down at the edge of night, barely awake. It's all I can do to lift him and steady him. When I hold him still, he fights me away, flails, hits, punishes the one whose help assures his infirmity. Angrily, he looks up into my eyes. Wait, wait! I run tepid water into the basin and rinse out one washcloth after another. And the last poem I'll read to you, it's kind of a trick poem. See the entrance. It's called in here, a key. Just before this comedy's over, the lights wheel from cool to rose. The lost sisters appear in lawn shifts. A statue speaks. Brothers shed their braided jackets for shirt sleeves. Slowly, one after another, all embrace. Left on stage, the clown whispers, I'm going to fetch the crypt sound, for I have the key. And runs out, down a ramp, through his listeners. Thank you.